Because the people who want what's best for you will do what's best for you. Everything else and everyone else is just noise.
I have with me Uma Thana Balasingham,
founder and CEO of Lean Singapore,
advocate of raw leadership,
inspiring others to embrace their true essence of self.
You know, who are you if you're not a daughter, a wife, a niece, a sister, engineer, insert your role name, you know? Who are you if not for those things? I mean, even my mother would give me Fair and Lovely cream from India to use every day so that my skin would become lighter. So I over-rotated to being a man. I had a lot of masculine traits. And this is when women make it more difficult for other women coming up behind them because they had to get there the hard way. And so they want to make it equally, if not harder, for other women to rise. Rodrigo, if I was a man, would you call me ambitious? But I want to say that every day I am not confident about something.
Yeah.
And one of the best tools that I use.
What do we need to know from your childhood that helps us understand the person who is in front of us?
Yes. One is that, you know, my mom lost a boy at 6 months, a girl at birth, adopted my sister who is differently abled, and then had me. So I think a first big theme for me is being a survivor. I was the child that survived, and for a big part of my childhood, I needed to prove, or I felt I needed to prove why I existed, you know, and I think that is a big part of what formed my perfectionist tendencies, which I took long into a big part of my life. I'm still working on it. I would say the second thing is, I think for a big part of my childhood, this is something I learned going to therapy, is that I was actually the parent. You know, like between the parent and the parent is always transferring energy to the child, but for me, it was the other way around. So I missed a big part of my childhood, and how that translates to who I am now is I always feel like I have to do everything and I get frustrated by that, you know, and I am still learning how to receive from the people who are closest to me.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And how do you think that has shaped you, the person you are today?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people talk about whether it's life transitions or finding meaning. Some use the word purpose, you know. And yes, I believe we all have unique gifts and we are here to serve the world in some way. And today I'm a big believer that none of that is possible without working on yourself, the deep introspection work, the hard work. Because reality is no one escaped trauma. I mean, the issue is people think trauma is big incidents, but it's actually the small trauma that happens to you every day that accumulates.
I love that, yeah. A lot of times we just think trauma as big, big events, but there are those small things that happen when we were a child that are impacting us as adults.
Yeah.
So you say that you worked a lot on yourself. Tell us a bit about your inner journey, your self-development journey.
Yeah, I think I was always curious as a child. I started reading business magazines at the age of 9, which my uncle would sneak to me. I didn't know what I was reading, but I formed very early opinions about the images I saw in those business magazines. And so you start your journey, at least for me, by thinking, okay, I need power, I need to wear a suit, I need to be traveling around the world, I need to earn a certain amount of money, which is a big part of my life. It's what I went after, because that is what I saw. And so I think the deep introspection work has evolved me to really think about, well, who is Uma without a vice president title, without a name of a big corporate? You know, what is the essence of me and what am I ultimately here to serve?
And what was the remember, what was the moment where you felt like you had some insights about yourself? What happened?
I probably started when I was in my 30s. You know, I only wore pants, Rodrigo, for the first 10 years of my career because I didn't know what to wear, right? And as an Indian woman, like, I had to learn to shave because we have a lot of hair on us, you know? And I learned that because I took part in a beauty pageant at the age of 25. But all of those life lessons came into my 30s. And I think the first step was I had to love and like what I saw in the mirror.
Tell me more about that journey.
You know, as a dark-skinned girl growing up in a country that likened beauty to being fair-skinned, I mean, even my mother would give me Fair and Lovely cream from India to use every day so that my skin would become lighter. Because lighter skin is associated to success, beauty, getting opportunities, etc. I mean, I saw it with my own friends who were lighter skin that got attention from boys. So that was huge insecurities growing up, along with, you know, not having the right type of body or not looking a certain way, not having money to buy nice clothes or things. I think all of that accumulates into just being deeply insecure. Thank goodness at age of 12, my parents invested in braces because I also had terrible teeth. So I am grateful for that. But that whole journey, then going into the workplace and then seeing like, oh, there's no one else that looks like me. So what should I be wearing, right? How should I be behaving? So I over-rotated to being a man. I had a lot of masculine traits. And so a big part of getting into loving myself and liking what I saw in the mirror was to shed all of that, which is, you know, big work.
Whoa. And tell me about how, what was your thought process when you were coming to the workplace and you felt like, okay, now I need to wear pants, for example. What were you thinking?
I just thought, well, I guess all these men are wearing pants and they got nice big jobs. I'll just wear pants.
Okay. Okay, and what did you learn along that journey?
Well, it felt like wearing clothes that didn't fit me or something that just doesn't suit you. And I think you don't know this later. I mean, earlier in life, you kind of discover later in life that actually the universe or life, and everyone has their own term, is always talking to you. And if you don't listen, it has a way to come back to give you a small slap and then a bigger slap. And so I think it just accumulated. And taking part in the beauty pageant was probably the shift at age of 25. Because I started as an engineer. So that, you know, the work that you do, that you have to bend down and screw machines, you know, pants was just reasonable, right? So so you just kind of not think about that. But I think as a woman, discovering your femininity and the essence of you is so important so that you can actually try to get on that journey to show up as yourself without compromising who you actually are in the workplace.
And how was that journey for you? How did you find that essence, which is you?
Only through therapy, lot of therapy.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think like a lot of women, I mean, I have that mindset. Every time I open the door to walk into the office, I step on a stage. And on that stage, you are personifying.
Yeah.
Certain things, you know? Are you walking into a negotiation? Are you walking into a room of peers where you are the only woman, the only Asian woman, the only dark-skinned Asian woman, the only dark-skinned Asian youngest woman. So you fake it till you make it.
If you have been getting value from our videos, don't forget to subscribe so we can give you even better content and you stay updated with new episodes. So hit that subscribe button and I will bring you even better show. Let's go back to the conversation now. So you had a successful career, but you might have had some challenges as a woman. What has been the most important challenges you faced in your career?
Yes, I've had a great career and I've had great champions, which, you know, speaks to the importance of sponsorship. I think women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. And the difference is that mentors advise and sponsors act. And so my biggest challenge, I would say, is a series of unconscious bias that happens every day that accumulates. For example, 1 year I had a performance review. As usual, I go straight to the section that says needs improvement in what, right? Areas of development, I think is what they call it. Forget all the strengths. I just went straight into areas of development. And my boss at that time said I was combative. Now, by this time, I had read the book Lean In, written in 2013 by Sheryl Sandberg. And so I had enough knowledge to have a dialogue. And so I asked him, you know, tell me more, so that it gave him a chance to explain. And two, I did a flip and asked him, hey, I wonder if Michael on the team, had he done the same thing, would you have called him combative?
What did he say?
Yeah, to his credit, he thought about it and acknowledged it's probably a no.
So you mentioned about biases. What are some of the biases that you encounter towards women at the workplace?
Okay. So first, I think it's important to just anchor on the word bias because it's got this negative connotation to it. An unconscious bias simply means it's an error in decision making. Yeah. It's important to recognize that we all have unconscious bias. It's not something you can cure because it's unconscious. So it's really a matter of being aware of it. I have unconscious bias, right? In my grab right here, had it been a woman because my mom was such a terrible driver, I'd be judging that grab driver all the way. I'd be waiting for her to make that first mistake. Oh, you stopped too soon. You could have gone past that traffic light, whatever that is. And then it would prove the bias that I have. It's a confirmation bias, right? So the four types of workplace biases. The first is walking the tightrope. This is when women can be seen as either too masculine or too feminine. So if I was being directive in the meeting, someone might say, oh, Uma, she sounded really aggressive in that meeting, didn't she? And if I was too soft-spoken or in a meeting, I'm like, oh, excuse me, maybe I have a suggestion. It's like too feminine. So we're always walking the tightrope. The second is prove it again. Women constantly find themselves proving that they deserve to be there, they have the capability and credibility over and over again. This manifests in, for example, I'm in a meeting, I say an idea, meeting goes on like nothing happened, and then a man says exactly the same thing and everybody says, great idea, right? Or how women are 7 times more interrupted on average compared to men. So that's prove it again bias. The third is a big one. It's the maternal bias. So women who are interested to start families or have families are often perceived to be less committed in the workplace. So they might miss out on special projects, promotions, etc. And the last is tug of war. And this is when women make it more difficult for other women coming up behind them because they had to get there the hard way. And so they want to make it equally, if not harder, for other women to rise.
Wow. And in this, what has happened, what you just mentioned, what frustrates you the most?
Well, none of it, actually. I think if I had to summarize the four, unfortunately, the thing that I'm passionate about, right, and the opportunity, is that these biases exist because we are conforming to structures that are built for men.
Okay.
Why would we ever say to a woman, too aggressive, too feminine, when shouldn't the guy be less aggressive or, you know, not as feminine?
Yeah. Do you have any data to that tell us, like, what is the situation of women at the workplace?
Yeah, so over 70% of biases falls in that first category of too masculine or too feminine. The next biggest one is actually the maternal bias. So I think those two are probably the big ones. I try and avoid data because for every data point, there's a counter data point.
True.
So
true.
I try and focus on solutions, which is why I built Lean in Singapore 8 years ago. Mm. In any of these situations, we can do something about it. And that's the power of a community coming together, and we give them the tools. Like, if you are interrupted in a meeting, right, you should have someone double your voice, ideally, you know, to say like, hey, I'd love to hear Uma finish her thoughts. You know, I mean, as a manager, you should do that as well, but have someone double your voice. I remember once I was going to present this idea in a meeting. And so I went to my boss before that meeting and I said, hey, I'm going to talk about this idea that you and I have discussed and aligned on. Will you double my voice in that meeting? So I present the idea. He comes above me to say, I support this for these reasons. And immediately the weight of what I have just said, you know, is it just presents itself in a different way.
Hmm, I see. And for women who are watching us, who are going through these stereotypes at the workplace, how can they break free and thrive in this environment?
Yeah. I would say the number one thing, which I think is the most powerful thing that a woman can do for her career, is to have a circle. Mm. A circle is peer-to-peer mentorship, a group of 8 to 12 women that you would build on your own. My own personal circle, there's 11 of us, and we meet every month. We're on a WhatsApp group supporting each other. Mm. And it's where I say women can come together and be unapologetically ambitious. It's very different to having a circle of friends. For example, had I not been successful to get that VP job in VMware, and I told my closest friends who are not my circle, they would have said, oh, Uma, it's not you, because you're perfect. It's them. They don't know what they're missing out. But my circle would have asked me very different questions. You say, well, did you line up your sponsors? You know, did you prepare for your interviews? Did you follow up with the hiring manager to get the feedback? Like, it's the ability to put a mirror to yourself without a friendship tax.
Hmm. So that helps a lot, even in terms of what you're saying in terms of confidence, right? Building the confidence.
Exactly.
You know that you have someone behind you that is there to support you in your journey.
Exactly. And it's the people that understand what it means to be in the workplace with you. Right. So you want to choose women that are around the same career stage.
Yeah.
And coming back to your confidence, a great example is, you know, the Harvard study that says men only need to check the box on 6 out of 10 requirements on a job description to apply for the job. Women generally feel they need to check all the boxes and sometimes offer a little bit more than that before they would apply. Having a circle. They would be like, yeah, Uma, you should go for it. And here's why. And you need that tribe.
I see. I understand to have that tribe. But if I'm at a workplace and I have a situation happening, as you mentioned about, like, you are too masculine, you are too feminine, or maybe this opportunity is not good for you because you're going on maternity leave.
Yeah.
How to navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, a circle definitely. So I would reach out to my circle, right?
Or,
like, we're all on a WhatsApp group. And this is, this situation happened. I mean, it's not a live hotline,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But it's it's an experience you're going to get through again. So, so I'd say the second thing, other than having a circle, is to, you know, educate yourself on what you can do, because there are tools that you can use to that, right? If someone said, well, you know, I really don't want to give you that special project because, you know, you're delivering in 3 months. I would flip back the question to say, why don't you let me decide, right? So, I mean, these are tools, but women need to feel confident to navigate that. If someone said she was too aggressive, she needs to feel confident enough to say, oh, I wonder if George said the same thing. Would you call him confident, right? So would you call him aggressive? So
yeah, I like it. So a big part is about building self-confidence.
Yeah.
What are your advice for people who want to build their self-confidence?
Yeah. And first, I want to say that, you know, I think every day I am not confident about something. And I think a lot of women might see someone like me or anyone else who comes across a podcast like this and think, oh, well, look at that, you know. But I want to say that every day I am not confident about something.
Yeah.
And one of the best tools that I use, and it is, and you are going to hit a low. I speak to a lot of women who are now in transition, who've lost jobs to restructuring in companies, and some are going up to a year, even 2 years of not being able to find something. That type of period really takes a toll of you. You know, like getting 20 no's, I mean, that's a big hit, right? But a really simple formula that I use is I try and write 3 things every day before I go to bed on what I did well. It's a confidence hack. And on some days, that list is going to say, I made myself a cup of tea today. And on some days, that list might say, I wrote my first blog, or I confronted a situation. It does not matter.
You
have to tell yourself the 3 things you did well that day. And this is the best confidence hack I've used.
And what I like is that it's also accepting that we will not be confident every day. But if we do, like, for example, a tool, like you say, like small little acts of just affirmation to yourself, that builds up the confidence in the long term.
Correct.
Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. And also you went through a process. You lost your job a few months ago.
Yes.
Can you tell us, how did you navigate it emotionally?
Yeah.
But also, what strategies did you use to overcome that phase?
Yeah, so I was in an interesting position where, you know, I'm in an executive position. So I want to recognize that I had privilege in that position. And I had 18 months to plan. And I think a lot of people miss out on this. And as much as I gave this advice to my entire organization, I don't know how many took it. So my first takeaway is that you have to use that time wisely if you have a heads up on an acquisition, or that you are about to have a risk to your job, is to use that time wisely. And the biggest use of that time wisely is investing in yourself. Mm. What is it that nobody else can take away from you? Mm. You know, whether you're going to do deep personal work, whether you are going to learn a skill, nothing that anybody else can take from you. That's where you should invest in yourself. And the third thing I would say, when I finally signed the papers, you know, I was actually very happy. A lot of people saw my LinkedIn post that went viral and they were like, were you actually smiling? I was like, yes, I was actually smiling to receive my papers, because I knew it was coming. I had planned for it, and I knew there was this whole new journey I was about to embark on. And then the next day, I go to an event and we're going around and everybody's going name and company name. And I go, oh gosh, now what do I say? Because it's the first day that I can't say Uma from VMware, right? So I'm like on the fly, I'm like, you know, I was like, do I use LeanIn? I mean, a lot of people can't, they don't have a portfolio career. So I just said, hi, I'm Uma and I'm a social leader and here's what I care about.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how was that transition for you? Because it happens with a lot of people, like I am this person, which is there's this position. When you don't have that, how was it for you? How did you handle that?
It was awkward.
Yeah.
It was different because it was the first time that I guess I was leaving an executive position without going to another one. So it's not like I could say, yeah, I left and I'm about to start. So if I had to relay some feelings, you know, I really had to just really think about who I am now, stand alone. No business card, no big corporate name, no big title. And that was the part that is tough. It's tough for a lot of people because we give over 80% of our time and energy on average to our work and we tie our identities to our work. But the time that I had in that 18 months and also what I asked my team to think about is you have to think about who you are outside of your identity. You know, who are you if you're not a daughter, a wife, a daughter-in-law, you know, a niece, a sister, an engineer, insert your role name, you know. Who are you if not for those things? That's, I've been sitting on that question for 3 years.
So who is Uma?
I think right now, Uma is four things. Uma is a connector. I think that if there's anything I've learned about myself and the ability to bring communities and people together, it's where I thrive. I discovered that in my first sales job. I am a connector. Second, I'm an altruist. I care about social impact. It is so deep in me and it's a voice I have ignored for years, which is what I'm choosing to listen to in the last 8 years. The third, I would say I'm an evocatory change agent. I feel like somebody is poking me when I sense injustice and I feel like I want to do something about it. And so I get into like, not under my watch. I'm going to do something about it. And fourth, I would say I'm a community builder. I think I have a gift to bring communities together.
That is so powerful. I loved it.
Thank you.
Wow, so much energy. And I think there's so much for you about what's next. So
yes.
We are excited. So now for women who want to progress faster in their career, tell us the practical advice, what to do.
Okay. I'm going to give a couple of nuggets on that one based on my experience. I think number one, when I was looking at who I was going to promote in my organization, I looked at three things. Number one, your ability to solve complex problems. Two, your ability to solve multiple complex problems on your own. And three, your ability to solve complex problems on your own on a regular basis. So those are the individuals. And I think Obama had this, there's a snippet that goes around where Obama says, if you want to ascend anywhere, you just have to get it done. But the nuance to that, for me at least, if you want to get into senior leadership and in the tech world, let's say director level and above, that's kind of the thing. I would have a board of mentors, people within the organization, within your chain of command, outside your chain of command, and outside your organization. That's how I built my board of mentors. And lastly, you need to have a sponsor. Mm-hmm. You need to have a sponsor that behind those closed doors is going to say your name, that if it came down to Jane over Joe, that this person is going to fight for Jane. So ultimately, you're dealing with two currencies, the performance currency and the relationship currency. So you got to deliver, that's the ability to solve complex problems, and you got to have your relationships, which is your mentors and sponsors.
Yeah, and I really like that you did, you really put it really well, the difference between a mentor and a sponsor. Like a mentor is someone that helps you, right? Yeah. Gives you advice. But the sponsor is someone that acts, right? And I really love that. And that's it. We need that behind us in our careers. I really like that you brought that point.
And it doesn't matter where you are in your career.
Yeah.
You know, when I went for my VMware VP job.
Yeah.
I had 12 interviews.
Yeah.
I had 11 yes and one no. And the one no came from an important stakeholder. And I had lined up a sponsor. I asked John Lombard, CEO of Entity, who was a big partner to VMware. And I texted John because I had the relationship, so relationship currency.
Yeah.
Texted John and I said, John, this is the job I want.
Yeah.
Will you put in a word to Duncan for me? Duncan was the hiring manager. And he did. So I already had established credibility with John. He was willing to do it. He did it. And that was what converted the 12th, you know, the no into a yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Even myself, I underestimated the power of sponsorship when we are in our career. So we are coming to the end, and I would like to ask you, like, what is your message for women who are there in the field fighting to stand out and to build a career? What is your one message to them?
Wow, just one message? Okay. Can I have three messages?
Yes, please, because I know you are ambitious. I knew you were going to ask me more.
Rodrigo, if I was a man, would you call me ambitious?
Yes.
Look, I think the most important thing is to invest in yourself. If there's one message. If you only had $200 in the bank, I would take someone influential out to lunch, split the bill. The learning you're going to get from this person is going to be priceless, and invest in a course, in a skill, something no one else can take away from you that, you know, is just yours. So that would be my one message, to invest in yourself.
And the other second, the other two?
The other two, I would say, is who are the people around you is so important. I think there's some saying out there about you are the sum of the five closest people around you. I mean, it is absolutely true. Your board, who is on your board? And by the way, for the women out there, please make sure there is a finance person who sits on your board, because we need to get comfortable with money too. But your tribe, the people you trust, the people that behind your back are going to whisper your name in the best light, because the people who want what's best for you will do what's best for you. Everything else and everyone else is just noise. So I think your inner circle, your tribe, is so important. And I speak to a lot of women. You know, I give 15 minutes for free, and I've spoken to about 50 now in the last 2 months. And a lot of people, especially women, struggle with what are my gifts, you know, who am I, that identity, being able to figure that out. And then how do you express that externally to the world that they understand? You know, I only recently came up with I am the architect of raw leadership. So it's taken me so long just to come up with that. I always knew vulnerability was my superpower. It takes time, and you have to put in the time. So the deep introspection work, invest in yourself, and then try and get help on how do you project that externally, because people talk about personal brand, but how do you show the essence of you externally that the world understands this is who you are and what you stand for, regardless of titles, companies, whatever.
Yeah, I really love it. And you mentioned about raw leadership.
Yes.
So can you tell us like what it is
and
how can we use it?
Yeah.
I mean, to succeed at the workplace.
Yeah. So this is part of my story and journey in first loving what I saw in the mirror and then being braver and having more courage every day to start showing up more of myself and less of being on the stage. And what I discovered is that vulnerability, when applied right, can lead directly to personal and professional success. That when you are able to show up and tell your story without the comfort of a PowerPoint or tons of data, etc., you are memorable, you know, because you become interesting and people gravitate towards that. And in a world today where everyone is grappling with wanting to have meaning in their work, I think it's really difficult as leaders or just anyone. And by the way, I think leaders are not about people who have titles or have how many reports, corner office, money in the bank account. None of those things matters because you're a leader if people want to follow you.
Yeah.
And if you want people to follow you, the emotional bridge is to expose the essence of you. And I think that starts with vulnerability. And so that is the concept of raw leadership. It's about being real. It's about being active, anchored. It's about being wise and worthy. And also being in wonder, you know. Sure, I might be the first and the only, but I'm going to wander in this space that I've been given and use it to benefit others coming up behind me. Yeah, I think we all have a responsibility to send the elevator down to others so that they can rise faster.
Well, what a way to end our conversation.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed our conversation. I mean, thank you for your vulnerability, openness during this conversation. And I think, I mean, good luck for you in your next phase of your life. But I'm pretty sure I'm with your energy and your ambition and your willing to help others, I'm sure you're going to create a lot of impact.
Thank you.
Thank you.